Welcome to Reinventing You. I'm your host, Danielle Silverman. I believe that in today's world of ever-constant evolution, the only career change that matters is when what you do matches who you are and what you believe. This show is where you'll learn how embracing change and reinventing yourself will help you navigate any disruptions and lead a life of happiness and fulfillment, especially in this ever-changing world. Your purpose and your meaning will drive your personal transformation. As I like to say, it's your vision, your life. Be passionate about it. Reinventing You starts now. Hello, and welcome to Reinventing You. I'm Danielle Silverman. Reinventing You is a show about what it means to pursue a career and a life that corresponds to who you are, to help you find your purpose and to live it. In the past few episodes, I've been talking about the current state of the workplace and what it means to reinvent your career in a world that is in constant turmoil. I've also introduced you to people who have lived through the reality of changing their career and who have kindly shared with you what that looks like and feels like. Today, my special guest is Gary Hubbell, a self-proclaimed compassionate coach of positive possibilities. Doesn't that sound lovely? Gary bases his work with leaders on decades-long study of philanthropy, and he firmly believes that each person, each employee, volunteer, each leader is someone who desires more than anything else to contribute the best of who they are to something bigger and more important than themselves. If you think about what's going on in the workplace today, the number of people who are leaving their jobs is staggering. And the number one reason they cite is their desire to bring more meaning into their life and into their work. Every single person I speak with says the same thing. I want my work to have more meaning. Well, this is the basis of the work Gary does. And I'm thrilled to have him here with me today. Gary, welcome to Reinventing You.
Thanks, Danielle. Great to be with you.
Yeah. So, Gary, before we start, share with us, what does reinvention mean to you?
Oh, how long do you have? We could unpack that for quite a bit.
Yeah.
I think probably the simplest way that I would describe it is that it's a posture toward the work and toward the world. And I think the fundamental ingredients of that posture are curiosity, experimentation, and a healthy dose of resolve. Because reinvention is usually not a straight line, and it's seldom easy. So all three of those ingredients, I think, make up the posture.
So curiosity, experimentation, and resolve.
Right.
Okay, I mean, we'll come back to those because I think they're very interesting. But first, tell us a little bit about yourself and how you got into working with leaders, just so people know a little bit about you.
Well, I've been at it for a few years, as you can probably tell. I would describe my work with leaders in the early part of my career is that I was hired to apply the tools. And so I was always at the direction of leaders. And, you know, you grow and you improve and you perfect some things. And so I would think in the middle part of my career, more of my work was about the strategic thinking about that. So it was more in partnership with leaders.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really when the shift started to happen for me. And in the what I would call the mature part of my career, isn't that a pleasant way to talk about it? It's more understanding the conditions that produce success. And I think about that as a deep inner dialogue with leaders. So I try to come along leaders wherever they are. And yet I have to understand my own trajectory throughout the work. It's far less about tools for me than it ever was in the earlier stages of my career.
So it's really about connecting with the leaders and partnering with them in doing this, quote unquote, inner work.
Yeah, that's right. My yoga teacher used to always remind me that every day you begin from where you are.
Ah.
And so when I'm doing the work with a partner, with a leader, I have to come alongside them. I get to come alongside them wherever they are at that moment. And some people are further along in their own conscious awareness, their own growth and development than other people. And so you have to meet those people where they are. And each of us has to do the work right from where we are.
So when you talk about leaders, what are you referring to? What level of the organization?
Well, all levels, really. Truth be told, that when I think about my 17-year career of consulting under my own umbrella, I would say I get the opportunity to work with the CEO or the president, a minority of the time. And typically I'm working with people that are right below that level. So not entry-level professionals, but more mid to senior mid-level professionals that are right below the CEO spot. The secret is out, though, Danielle. All of these things that you and I talk about as part of reinvention, part of looking at one's career, part of thinking about what is my highest and best contribution, applies equally regardless of the position.
Absolutely. And so what are you hearing from these leaders? What are they looking for?
Well, I couldn't help but pay attention to your introduction, where you were talking about just how volatile the world is right now. I think that's the driving force. There is, I choose to work principally in the not-for-profit world. And often I'm working with large, complex organizations that are not for-profit, and occasionally working with for-profit companies. The context is different, but often the issues are the same. And a lot of it in the last several years are driven by just this rapid pace of change. Our world and all of our assumptions of how to succeed in that world have been destabilized. I think not just because of COVID, but there has been an acceleration of everything, including the demands on leaders to perform. So I think what leaders are typically looking for, regardless of their context, are the same three things. They're looking for direction. They're looking for inflection, that is the next bump. And they're looking for fuel. What are the resources available to us to fuel that inflection?
And so, yeah, go ahead.
There's stuff that gets in the way of that, clearly. Because all leaders are working with people, right? Nobody works alone. And oftentimes you end up with a group of people that the leader is working with that default to a mindset of almost the paralysis of problem solving. And so there's this continuous loop of trying to fix things. And there's this drumbeat of negativity that seems to operate in some cases right beneath the surface and too often out in the open. And that permeates the environment where leaders are trying to create that inflection. I also think, and we see it in the States especially, but it sure isn't limited there, that there are so many diametrically opposing views. It seems like it's immovable. And inside companies and organizations, when people lock into positions, perspectives that seem immovable, it's like we can only agree that things are not working, but we can't really agree on what to do differently about it. So leaders are having to confront that. And one of the things that I feel the worst about for these leaders is when all of those things result in people feeling that they just can't affect any real change. And so there's this this resignation and almost giving up. And that's hard to witness.
So if you were to pinpoint one thing that people are telling you they're really, really struggling with, what would that be?
I think it's the subtle stuff that is more cultural than anything else. I'm talking corporate culture here. It's the unspoken feeling of quiet cynicism that despite our best efforts, we really can't get the big things done, the things that we put on the posters on the wall, the things that we line our website with, the things that sound so wonderful and deep down inspire us to want to do our best work, mm-hmm. tend to get ground out by that pervasive sense of the lift is too big, the lift is too hard, we really can't make a dent in things, move the needle on the things that we care the most about.
Wow, so that's huge. I mean, because that means that people are really basically giving up, that they are able to affect any change.
I think so. In the worst situations, that's certainly true.
Yeah.
I encounter a lot of people who haven't given up, but I think that they've become more risk averse. They've tried to affect some kind of change and they keep getting stymied. And so it's not that they've given up, but now they're pretty wary about raising their hand and stepping into the breach and trying to innovate because it hasn't been welcomed in a lot of cases. And so while the person hasn't given up, there's a lot of energy and creativity that's lost and they're no longer bringing their A game.
It's sort of like when you experience somebody always putting you down and then, well, you don't try really very hard anymore because you know that the result is going to be, it's almost like, what's it called? Pavlov's dog, when you get a certain kind of feedback, you stop trying, basically. I know you're saying it's not exactly quitting, but it's almost like, it sounds like it's almost like quitting. It's because you're not trying hard anymore to get. So what happens when that happens? What goes on in the organization when people are not putting that creativity into the system?
Well, you know this as well as I do. There's all manner of manifestation. One, there's a brain drain. There's a talent loss. People check out. The people who are hungry, who are wanting to make a bigger contribution but not feeling an outlet for it, will check out. And so that not only reduces the quantity of people to lean into something important, but it also takes out a lot of people with really important experience. Secondly, I think that there's this, Parker Palmer talks about the corrosive cynicism that exists. And when I first read that phrase, it burned a hole in my memory bank, no pun intended, just because of the visualization of what acid does on any surface. It just eats away at the surface. So when I think about the effect of quiet cynicism, it is corrosive to the organization. So that affects team morale, that affects the creativity that is brought to trying to solve problems. Because none of this stuff's happening in a vacuum. This is all happening while stuff is going on, both inside the organization and outside the organization, at warp speed. Yeah. And so that kind of inner misalignment, that inner dis-ease can be devastating. Let's talk about some fun stuff here.
Well, what I want to hear from you is, given all of this, I mean, yes, it all sounds really negative, but how do you fix it?
Well, That's the easiest part to talk about and the hardest part to do.
All right.
Because the fix, and I don't want to, I'm not trying to play with the words, but I will take that word just as you've offered it. The fix is not something outside of the leader, it's inside the leader. It is a part of a reframing. Because once you come to hold the belief that you and I are co-creating the very world that we occupy, now we have a reciprocal responsibility, and we can either lean out or we can lean in. And so what I try to get leaders to do is, before they're thinking about some tool being applied or some new initiative, is to think instead, what is your contribution to the present situation? And so that usually uncovers a way for leaders to step back, re-examine the assumptions that they're making about everything, including their work and their contribution. So that's less of a fix and much more of a reframe that begins to chart a whole new path of how people show up.
Yeah. It's interesting. I had an image in my mind when you started to talk about that. You know, when you hear a siren, you're in heavy, heavy, heavy traffic, like 3-4 lanes wide and bumper to bumper. And all of a sudden you hear a siren behind you. It could be a fire truck. It could be an ambulance. And most people just stay in their lanes. Where they tell you what you have to do is try and move your car to presumably to the right or wherever there is the most room so that ambulance can go through, right? And I find it, having been in situations like that, I find that when I do that move, then generally other people follow me. So for me, the reframe is, if I change, then other people might change as well.
Yeah, that's good. And before COVID, I used to be in airplanes all the time traveling to do client work. And what we all remember from being on an airplane is the flight attendant telling us in the pre-flight demo, put your own mask on. Yes. Before coming to the aid of somebody else. And so it's the same thing here.
Yeah.
You have to look inside to do your own inner work of leadership before you can expect that there's going to be any kind of significant and meaningful inflection that you'll generate externally.
Right. Gary, that's very, very wise. And it's a perfect place to just take a little break. And then when we come back, we'll continue this fascinating conversation. You're listening to Reinventing You on Transformation Talk Radio. This is your host, Danielle Silverman, with my special guest, Gary Hubbell.
Not just talk, conversation for profound self-awareness. Stick with us. Your best life awaits on TransformationTalkRadio.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Reinventing You. Gary, my special guest, Gary Hubbell, is here to talk about reframing in the leadership field. Gary, I hear that you're going to soon be offering a masterclass and a course that specifically covers the issues that we've been talking about. You talked about partnering with leaders to talk about direction, the word you use, inflection, and to fuel as well, what's going on to help them reframe to sort of avoid getting to this quiet cynicism that seems to be enveloping corporations today. So can you tell us a little bit about this masterclass and the course also, and what issues you're going to be covering, that sort of thing?
Yeah, thanks, Danielle. One of the reinvention moves for me was precipitated by COVID, as happened to a lot of us. Mm-hmm. And I used to have almost all of my consulting practice that was organizational centric. And so I was doing consulting projects and initiatives sometimes over long periods of time, with organizations. And then I'd work with teams inside of those. But with COVID, it really gave me an opportunity to step back and say, how can I be of service to individuals? And so my thought about how best to do that was through these kind of online offerings. And so that was really the impetus for me being able to see what I could contribute here. And, you know, I love to play a little with words and sometimes add a little pinch of humor. So I thought about an appetizer, which is this master class, is one that gets at some tools that people can use to address this reframe, to intervene in this quiet cynicism, these things that are eating away at the progress and the creativity of their teams. And so much of the things that people are dealing with are part of institutional history, part of the complexity of big organizations. And so I still think that people want to accomplish something. So the masterclass is called Getting Big Stuff Done Despite Organizational Headwinds and Hairballs. Because if you've ever been caught up in an organizational hairball, you'll know how quicksand-like it really feels. So that's going to deal more with this reframing around the frustration and being able to demonstrate your value and your leadership effectiveness right from where you are right now, regardless of the position. So
getting big stuff done. First of all, the issue we've been talking about is people are not getting big stuff done because they're being held back by all kinds of things that you're calling headwinds and hairballs. I love it. So just the name alone, I want to sign up, right? So getting big stuff done, really, really big attraction, I think, because that's what we want to do. We want to, you know, have some effect on the organization. We want to be able to, we believe in the organization, we want to get stuff done, but there are things that are holding us back, these headwinds and these hairballs. So now tell us a little bit about what goes into that.
Into the master class?
Whatever you want to talk about.
Yeah, I would amplify what you said, is that our customers, our clients, our boards have not let up on their demands for big accomplishments, right? So the message coming to us from the marketplace is, yeah, I know this is hard work, but you got to find your way through it. So there's still an expectation. There's still, I think, among a lot of people, an inner drive, as you said at the top of the show, toward meaning, toward purpose. And that's big stuff. And so when people are feeling that, they have to find a way to navigate through these headwinds and these organizational hairballs. What the course does is flip this into much more of the generative, much more of the positive. And it's called Eye on Abundance, Creating the Conditions for Trust, Autonomy, and High Impact. And it's really a deep dive into, one, the mental reframe, to recognize that each of us every day has a choice of what we will see, what we will pay the greatest attention to. In fact, what I try to convey is everything we need is here, and it's available right now. Mm-hmm. And so if we can choose to see it, that is the eye on abundance, then what that becomes is an invitation for people to bring their best contribution. And when we develop that in a way of true invitation, co-creating the environment that we will inherit, trust results from that. When that trust is there, there's no need to look over somebody's shoulder. And so there's a sense of autonomy. And when trust is high and autonomy is high, purpose usually flourishes, right? Mm-hmm. And when that's happening and people are bringing their very best contribution to that, there's more creativity, there's more innovation, and as a result, more impact. And so what I try to do over the course of 8 modules is to provide not just the mindset reframe for that, but also talk through what I have found to be some of the most powerful tools in accomplishing that. And back to the thread that you and I established at the top of the show, it's really about the inner work, because all of the tools come to life in the hands of the practitioner. So I'm trying to meet these leaders from all different places, all different levels, right where they are, to help them see the way to influence the future that they most want to see.
Now, Gary, you've done, I understand you're putting this into a course now, but you have done this kind of work for many, many years with leaders. What do they tell you about going through this kind of transformation? What do they tell you about it?
Well, the thing that I think I hear the most actually became one of the words that you hear me use a lot. I have enormous gratitude for the trust that people place in me. And as a result, it really develops into a relationship. And so people at the end of a period where we've done some deep dives together, whether that's in client service or it's been some of the other leadership retreat work that I've been doing since 2009 under the banner of what I call conversation, people really credit me with their reframing, where they're shifting their attention from what was once more deficit-oriented, the fix mentality, into curiosity about possibility. So that reframe is something that I hear a lot. It's harder for me to say, but I do hear people credit me with being a wise companion with them on their leadership journey. So it's not a once and done, here's a tool, good luck to you, but rather walking side by side, really caring about their outcomes. And that's how I like to work. That's where I think I can bring my best self to it. And if I can't care about their work and them, then we shouldn't be working together anyway,
of course,
right?
Of course. And the reframe, just so we understand correctly, the reframe is really what will bring this eye on abundance, right? Which will help them with the three things that you talked about, the direction, inflection, and fuel. So is it time to talk a little bit more about those?
Sure. And as I joked earlier, I think we could talk about that all day. Because it is easy to talk about and hard to do. I think we have been socialized, and we've often, over the decades in business school and elsewhere, we've taught leaders how to keep their eye on the gap, how to keep their eye on what's missing, how to keep their eye on the void. When I started in my consulting work, one of my early organizational leaders used to say, well, Gary, you need to go into the client and ask, what is it that keeps you up all night? Now, while that's not a bad question, if that's the only question, all that you've done is you've teed up a deficit situation. And so what I try to counsel is that we're not ignoring those things because they're real. It's a both and. The other side of the equation is, well, what's working? What's working best right now and why? And so what I try to help leaders do, and this is what the course is really all about, is to understand how to mine these stories of when we have operated at our very best, even if it's just some kind of a nanosecond in time, for us to understand what are those root conditions of success. If we can understand what was happening at that time, who was involved, what were we bringing to it, what tools were at play, and we can begin to see that that was not just conducive, but essential to the success that we just told the story about, then we can begin to imagine that that can be applied elsewhere, that it can be applied to another issue. And this magic thing happens, and I don't want to make light of this, but what ends up happening is when people take their eye off of the sole focus on the problem, the deficit, and they expand it to also see what's good, what's true, what's better, what's possible, what ends up happening is their attention to the deficit starts to drop, and their attention to the generative, the positive, the possible increases. And the more of that that they do, what do you think they find? More possibility, more creativity, more solutions. And so it's a truism, I think, that what you pay the most attention to will grow.
Absolutely. It's the basic principle of what we talk about. What you focus on grows. So if you focus on the negative, you will find more negative. If you focus on the positive, you will find more positive, and that will grow.
Yeah, that's my experience.
Yeah, and there have been many, many business case studies done on this that prove this principle to be true. So I think the work that you're doing is absolutely extraordinary.
And it's one of the underpinnings, the core principles that undergird the body of work called appreciative inquiry, which is really powerful. And so that clearly influences all of my work and my study.
Yeah. I'll never forget the example that I learned. It was about this car mechanic company that decided to survey their clients, and instead of they found that there were a lot of clients that were leaving, and instead of asking their clients, those clients that were leaving, why they were leaving, they decided instead to ask the clients who were staying why they were staying. So looking at the positive as opposed to the negative. And almost to a fault, they answered, because every time we come to get our car serviced, you offer us a free car wash. So it didn't matter where they lived. It could have been, 20 miles away from that particular body shop. But they were coming because they were getting a free car wash every time they had their car serviced. And so what this company started to do was they started advertising the fact that they offered a free car wash, and their business grew. Which is, it's a small example, but it's exactly the kind of thing you're talking about. It's really, how do you, when you focus on what's good and what's working, that's what will grow.
And in your story, as everyday oriented as that is, it's a reminder that the power is in the question. Mm. More than the answer. And so figuring out what is the right question, I think, is 80% of the challenge here.
Absolutely. So do you help leaders figure out what the right question is?
Well, yeah, that's where we spend a lot of time. And that's part of why the reframe is there. So what I find is leaders can get this. This is true of almost everything. It's the basis of experiential learning. But until leaders actually have their own experience of flipping that negative, that list of an inventory of all the things that are not working well right now, and then the shorter list, but the gnarlier list of the core reasons why things are not working well right now. They could spend a lifetime trying to reverse all of those things. Yet if they stop and they reframe that and they ask themselves and their colleagues, but what do we really want? What do we want more of? Do we want just the absence of those things that we previously listed, all of the ills and the negatives? Or do we want something more than that? And so to harness that imagination, just that flip right there, gives people the opportunity to begin down a path of saying, well, okay, if that's what you want more of, imagine that at its highest and best expression. What might that look like? That's what captures people's imagination.
Fantastic. Gary, before we go to the next break, I want you to tell people how they can find this masterclass so that they can sign up and hear your brilliance in person.
Well, there's a number of ways, but certainly the headwinds and hairballs link that you'll provide is the fastest way.
Okay.
To be able to register. More information about it is available through me. So send me an email, Gary@reframe2thrive.com, or call me.
Okay. So we'll provide your email and your phone number and the link to join the masterclass in this video, in this podcast. Fantastic.
It's just a couple of weeks away. So your timing is perfect.
Fantastic. Okay. We'll take a short break and we'll see you very soon.
Get empowered.
So welcome back to Reinventing You with my special guest, Gary Hubbell, who's just talked about his new masterclass, Getting Big Stuff Done. Oh, you give the name. You'll remember it better than I do. I remember headwinds and hairballs, but the exact order, I'll leave that up to you, Gary.
Just put those two things together, getting big stuff done.
Yeah.
Despite. Headwinds and organizational hairballs.
Hairballs.
It just rolls right off the tongue.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So this is absolutely fascinating. I want to come back for a second to, my own area of interest, which is career reinvention. How does what you do help leaders reinvent their careers? What does it do for them?
Well, I think it's powerful because, let me back up. I got cursed, I say tongue in cheek, by my parents who raised me to believe that there are three very important decisions that you make in your life. And each of those three will influence the rest of your life, every other dimension of your life. And one of those three was what you choose to do for a living. So for me, I was enculturated to believe that work is joyful, that work is important, work is powerful. And so a career, in my judgment, ought to always be a progressive set of experiences where you can grow and bring your best contribution and you can get filled up as an individual. So for people who, plateau or they reach an impasse or they feel that they're just out of energy and they need to reinvent their career, I think all of these questions that you and I have been talking about are absolutely essential. One, and I've heard you talk about the trends of quiet quitting and where we're in the post-COVID world of the Great Resignation. You know, there's when I think about that as a backdrop, I'm thinking about how the mindset and the skills that you and I have been talking about, these principles that you and I have been discussing, can be applied to reinventing one's own career. And so just think about the people that you're working with, Danielle, to help them think about what it is they see about their own work, their own career. Mm-hmm. They can see holes and deficits, mm-hmm. and I hope they can also see great gifts and abundance. Mm-hmm. And if they can see more of the latter, then they can begin to imagine the application of that somewhere else. So either moving into a different environment, different company, different department, or moving forward in the future in their existing context, but entering differently, being a different person, making a different contribution. Because again, I believe in this whole ability that we co-create the environment that we will inherit. And so for people who might love the company, love the purpose, but feel blocked and stymied, they may not want to exit and risk not having the same connection. So I think their choice is to reframe a lot of their thinking, the assumptions that they make, re-examine how they are showing up in that current spot. And for those people who say, well, you know, I've already made the conclusion, drawn the conclusion, or worse, the company made the decision for me and said, you're out, then the same approach that we've been talking about applies in charting the path of that transition from one spot of employment into another. And to do that in a way that engenders confidence, brings a sense of real grounding, all of which then shows up in the interview and the interaction with new colleagues.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's what I talk about all the time. So when there is dissatisfaction, let's say, with work, it doesn't necessarily mean that you have to leave the organization. It really, how you have to do that inner work in order to figure out what it is that you can, what contribution you can bring to make it better, basically. That's the reframe, right?
Yes, along with what is this, just really illuminating, what is the source or sources of satisfaction?
Yeah.
What do I love about the work that I'm doing, the people with whom I'm working, the people that I'm ultimately serving? And, you know, that's like that's exercising any muscle, just like going to the gym. If you haven't been asking yourself those kinds of questions for a while, those muscles are atrophied. So you don't start. I just came back from the gym a couple hours ago, so it's in my mind. You don't start by lifting the 30-pound dumbbell. You start with a 5 or a 10-pound dumbbell until you can do a number of reps that you feel like, all right, I've built up some capacity here. And then you can move on because you trust the response of the muscle. And the same way is true when you're practicing this new mindset, practicing these new tools.
Small steps. So in the spirit of appreciative inquiry, what's the best experience you've ever had in working with leaders?
Oh, the best. And I, just as you asked that, I immediately see her in my mind's eye, a woman that I worked with in the Pacific Northwest, who came to the work, and the work was planning the next 3 to 5 years as far as they could see into the future. This was just pre-COVID. What the trajectory would be for a multi-hospital foundation. And so There was a lot of territoriality and a lot of fiefdoms. And yet this young leader came into this work with a real sense of a possibility. She already was kind of equipped with this orientation toward serving a bigger possibility. And so with that, she became just a wonderful partner. Every idea that I was sharing with her was falling into really fertile soil. And as a result of that, she magnified those feelings, and that created an energy that brought colleagues into the table, to the table. It created a real sense of cascading lift. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when those times happen, because you're working with somebody who's consciously aware already, there's less about the reframe, and there's more about the imagining possibility. So stretching their thinking even further.
Yeah. What's interesting, because when you see us, you talk about philanthropy, when you talked about a hospital, we know that any nonprofit organization tends to be extremely bureaucratic, and that's usually much, much harder to get things done in that kind of environment. So I find it interesting that you focus on a lot on those kinds of organizations. And your tools, your processes, your experiences are successful. It's tremendous. You know, it's like finding people that to go through that. Can you tell us a little bit about that, working through that tough road of bureaucracy?
Well, yeah, there's no question that bureaucracy has earned its reputation as an organizational hairball. Bureaucracy is where a lot of good ideas go to die. Mm-hmm. And a part of that is, I think, and there are countless books, there's countless podcasts, there's countless offerings about this. What I try to do is I think about the organization not in terms of these inanimate labels like departments and divisions, but think about this as an organism that is alive. And every part of the organism, whether you think about biology and think about cells, or you think about the whole organization as being comprised of people, every single interaction, whether it's through email or it's some kind of a post of some kind, is an interaction with another person. And so there's a lot of what you and I have talked about where helping people understand, make no assumptions, take nothing personally, always be impeccable with your word, and always do your best. These are Don Miguel Ruiz,
four agreements.
The four agreements, as you know. And so little things like that can really help to dismantle what seems like the lockjaw effect of bureaucracy. And the other thing that I want to say, and this I hope does not sound fluffy or trite, but never underestimate the effect that your genuine caring about your colleague can have in their work, their perspective, in their world. Never underestimate the influence that you can have. Because I think all of us, whether we're buttoned down and protective or cynical, underneath almost all of us beats the heart of somebody who wants meaning, somebody who wants to make a better contribution. I go back again to what you said at the opening. we are in search of meaning and purpose.
Mm-hmm. And I agree with you. The majority of people do want to do good, and they generally do want to be helpful and kind and cooperate, whatever other words you want to choose. But I know that there are some people who, and I'm sorry, I'm going to go to the negative for a little bit, then maybe we'll come back to the fun stuff. There are people who are stymied because they come across people who are not like that. The bad egg, the bully in the organization, the person who can ruin the reputation of the entire organization. But really, so how does one deal with that? You know, I mean, I know I've been victim of those kinds of situations more than once, and I know other people who have as well. We come out of it. We come out of it learning a lot. It's sometimes difficult to deal with. What do you tell those people?
Yeah, that's a daily reality for a lot of folks, right? So that's not a theoretical question. That's a very real question. Couple of real practical things I would want your listeners to know and hopefully practice is one, as you encounter somebody like that, it's back to the inner work. The first thing is to show up and listen without judgment. And so what's the way that we flip that little judgmental switch in our head? We get curious. I wonder why Danielle is holding that view, as opposed to, dang, there goes Danielle again. So just that, we can call that a reframe, but that shift means if you can do that in the split second in your mind, now what you say back to that person is not going to be loaded with more angst. It's not going to feed the negative emotion of the other person. It's going to end up at a minimum being neutral. It may actually get people to pause and hear themselves to say, oh, that kind of came off as abrupt or harsh. And the second thing, we've talked about this throughout our discussion, is the process of flipping that. And I do this even with the family at dinner table conversations when somebody is just on a tear about things. I'll listen. And then I'll lean in and I'll ask, so what is it that you really want? And then just pause. And usually what I find is the other person will pause too. It's like, they've been on a roll of all this stuff that's not working and that they're really annoyed about. And now you're not giving them any more leeway for that. Now you've actually asked them to flip their view from the things that frustrate them to, well, what is it that you want? And so part of the reframe in the inside the leader learner is to realize that those people are often not just being critical to be pissy and hard to deal with. These are people that have an ideal in their mind, and they recognize how far we are from it today, so they can be an ally. So if you hold that view of the other person, you're unlikely to villainize them. You're rather going to see them as a co-contributor, and that changes everything that happens thereafter.
So your site again is Reframe the Number 2 Thrive.
Yes, that is the new site that we're launching. It will be the platform for our courses, for my coaching, and ultimately for my consulting. So if you've picked up on any thread throughout our conversation, my whole view is we have to reframe to thrive.
Absolutely. Yeah, reframe. So www.reframe2thrive, the number 2.
Correct. Correct.
And the name of your masterclass again is Getting Big Things Done, Getting Big Stuff Done Despite Headwinds and Organizational Hairballs.
Right.
Fantastic.
Sounds great the way you say it.
And the name of your course, now I really understand, Eye on Abundance. In other words, instead of looking at the gap, look at what's working. Looking at what has been working and where your best effort has been and the effect of that. And the positive effect of that.
Exactly. And the leader's attention on creating the conditions that drive more of that success.
Right. So, you know, in 30 seconds, what's the best advice that you could give leaders today? I know we've already said it. I think I would know, but I want to hear it from you.
I would invite a leader to hold the view that your leadership is a relationship, and every relationship is a conversation. So if you think about it that way, every conversation the leader is having holds the seeds of possibility. If we're really intentional about how we show up in leadership with every conversation, imagine what's possible.
Wow. Gary, I think this is probably the most beautiful place to end our conversation today. Hopefully we'll have many more to come, because being able to see what's possible is probably the most positive thing that we can do. To people who are listening, I think you also, if I'm not mistaken, you also have a gift for our listeners. You have a free download, I think.
I do, yes, thanks. What I've been doing is mining a lot of the lessons that I've accumulated over the years. So I put it all together in a small spot that is downloadable for your listeners. It's called Reframing Resistance: The 10 Things About Leadership I Wish I'd Known Years Ago.
That's fantastic. Reframing again, in this case, resistance, which is what we've been talking about, the things that the headwinds and the hairballs that leaders encounter in their day-to-day work. You can contact Gary directly by email at gary@reframetothrive.com. You can also reach him by phone at 414-899-3157. All of that information should be in the video itself. Gary, it's been an absolute pleasure having you today on this show. You bring a fresh and positive outlook on the world of organizations by reframing the way we look at how we work. And that, I think, is so, so needed in today's world. Thank you for being here. Thank you for being you. And thank you, everybody, for listening to this show, to Reinventing You. I'm your host, Danielle Silverman. Until next time. Thank you for listening to Reinventing You with me, your host, Danielle Silverman. Tune in on the second and fourth Monday each month at 11 a.m. Eastern, 8 a.m. Pacific on TransformationTalkRadio.com. Join me and feel inspired and optimistic about your future. We only get one life, so embrace change and thrive with me. Find work that aligns best with your soul and what you enjoy. For more information, go to reinventingyou.com.
The views expressed on this program are those of the host, guests, and callers, and do not necessarily reflect the views of the station, its management, or advertisers. You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio.